James Brereton, welcome to the Carolina Weather Group for this April 3rd, 2024. This week, we are talking sea level rise, an issue not only the coastal Carolinas have to worry about, but the big picture of understanding how emissions are changing the world around us. Shay Gibson and his exciting conversation with Doug Marcy, Senior Coastal Hazard Specialist at NOAA, is coming up in just a moment. But first, a quick programming note to let you know about a limited time offer coming to you from us here at the Carolina Weather Group. You may remember we previously did Panelist Playlist, a way for you to get to know your favorite Carolina Weather Group panelists and our favorite taste in music. Well, for a limited time only, that series is coming back to the Carolina Weather Group feed, available exclusively on Spotify. Each Saturday this month, we'll be dropping one of our panelist playlists, and check them out by heading on over to Spotify and listening to the Carolina Weather Group. They'll be right in there with our weekly episodes, but they're only available until June, when they'll be gone forever. So check out the Carolina Weather Group on Spotify if you want to listen to our panelist playlist. Now let's head on over to Shay Gibson and pick up this week's conversation on sea level rise with
we reference the countries that have higher emissions overall. In some countries, we've managed to stabilize the numbers that are now, like the United States has sort of stabilized. We've been making some progress in the more positive direction overall. There's still some countries that, you know, don't have these practices in mind. What you're doing is misbalancing the atmosphere. You're putting more CO2 in the atmosphere. It affects the whole breathing mechanism. Everything is affected by it, especially atmospherically, all the way down to the ground, right? So sea level rises, and Doug, this, you know, if you have anything you want to show, that'd be great.
I like this because this is from the NCA5. This kind of shows you these little dials, which I really like. So basically this says the average year we're going to see when temperature is going to exceed 20 degrees, or 20 degrees, 2 degrees Celsius increase, and when we're going to see an additional 2 degrees Celsius. So with these lower scenarios, you know, we're never going to get there, but you're looking at, if you've got like a middle to high scenario 7, you know, by 2047, we could see two more degrees. And that's, you know, the ocean is just absorbing a lot of that. And that's right now that most of the sea level rise we've seen is called steric, which is basically you heat up a liquid and it expands. And then we're going to start seeing more contribution from the ice sheets. That's going to continue. And that's where it gets really local, because that's more of a global thing, the ocean expansion part. But then regionally, you'll have, well, it depends on how close you are to the ice sheets, because the ice sheets themselves are actually holding ocean water closer to them because of their mass. So as they start to melt and the mass is redistributed, they won't hold as much water next to them. So the farther you are from the ice sheets, the more sea level rise you're going to see. That's kind of counterintuitive.
You know, it reminds me of the plume model, right? Where you have, you know, your various model outputs that go out. I don't know whether or not this is dynamic or statistical, but it looks like, you know, I think the idea here is that critical 2 degrees Celsius mark is important here, right? And when we're going to hit that, based on current projections, like where we're going now, it looks like most of these models are pretty firm agreement for at least the next 10 to 15 years before we start to see that spread. And then, you know, depending on what we can do, maybe even as humans, but also, you know, the planet, what it's doing as well to maintain or keep below that 2 degree mark. So what, all right, now we don't want to get too far into this topic, Doug. I know you're more of a sea level rise guy, but does that 2 degrees Celsius mark, is that going to be an immense impact on sea level rise? I know we're trying to avoid that.
Even if we stop CO2 production now and go back to, you know, pre-industrial ages, we're baked into a certain amount. It doesn't look like any of these curves are ever going to get back to pre-industrial, you know, not by 2100 anyway.
Right.
We're baked in to have a certain amount of sea level rise. Can it be mitigated by reducing CO2? Yes. I think, you know, 2 degrees seems to be the threshold we're using as, you know, this is bad. So I think, you know, if we're going to see that much, see, this is a good, not only has land temperature been going up, sea temperature has been going up too. This is actually from NCA4, but yeah, these are all different models, but yeah, the sea temperature, it seems to like lags a little bit behind land temperature, but it is absorbing a lot. It's also absorbing a lot of CO2.
I know a lot of folks are going to be, you know, looking at that last graph, and they're going to ask, hey, you know, do we have as many sensors in these areas where we're watching back, you know, 100 years ago versus where we are now? We're sort of in the era of data. Does that contribute to more exact data that's maybe pulling these higher in time, or do we have a pretty good solid basis for evidence based on even old sensor data that came out?
We do the best we can to reconstruct what's happened in the past. So even before we had tide gauges, you know, I think the oldest tide gauge in this country is 100 and something years old, is San Francisco. Before that, though, we can go back and look at paleo sea levels. You know, I'm a geologist. We can look at cores. We look at ice cores to see the amount of CO2. We can go back and look at low stands and high stands of sea level in the rock record. And so we can reconstruct that. And then starting around, you know, like I said, the early 1900s, most of the places started getting tide gauges. And then with 1993, we had satellites starting to do altimetry. Now we have several that are doing that. NASA just put up SWAT satellites, going to do really well with that, as well as inland rivers and stuff, lakes. But so there again, it's collecting this sort of same information, but it's more lines of evidence, you know, so more lines on that squiggly. That kind of, it's like building a case for, you know, you're a lawyer, you're trying to corroborate evidence. That's essentially the same thing. Another line of evidence we used in this graphic here kind of puts it all together. You know, this is the tide observations, the solid line. And then what we're starting to do now is observe, like we can extrapolate out, you know, kind of best fit the curve. And what this is showing is that if you just do a regular linear regression of all that historical data, because it was rising a lot slower a long time ago, that kind of brings the whole slope down. But in the last 30 years or so, we've actually seen an increase in the slope. So that's what that's showing. And that's another line of evidence. That's looking at an extrapolation. NASA did that for this Sea Level Rise Tech Report. That's the dashed line. And then you can overlay the scenarios, compare that to the temperatures, the SSPs, and kind of get an idea, you know, middle range, this is what we're looking at, possibly intermediate high, intermediate low, depends. Now regionally, this is sort of nationally, but regionally, you know, it's going to change a little bit. Vertical land motion makes a big difference. Like in Louisiana, they're going to have much higher rates or amount of sea level by 2100 because of that vertical land motion rate.
Have you ever seen what an indoor environmental assessment looks like in a commercial building or business? During a full assessment, we collect data throughout the building and compare the measurements room to room. We can also collect samples that go to a lab, such as the small cassette shown here, which will be analyzed for types and amounts of mold in the air. We follow up with a physical inspection, looking for moisture sources and using moisture meters to determine if any of your building materials are wet.
go-esg.com or 336-373-1538. And we'll get back to our conversation with Che Gibson and Doug Marcy in just a moment. But again, a thanks to our friends at Weatherflow Tempest, who sent our Dan Whitaker to the National Storm Chaser Summit in Texas earlier this year with one of their weather meters. It was so exciting to be able to see one of those in action and give it away to a lovely participant there at the conference. And we will have another one that we will be giving away at the Scheele Museum in Gastonia this July when we see you there for Weatherproof. So thanks again to our friends at Weatherflow Tempest for making that available to you. Now back to our conversation with Che Gibson and Doug Marcy, Sea Level Rise. That's the topic, and Doug is an excellent expert. We're so glad to have him once again on the Carolina Weather Group, as he is a senior coastal hazard specialist with NOAA, and he's sharing his insights with us again this week.
Let's talk about the winds, like from just a northeast perspective, even without a full moon phase. Are we seeing a higher rise or higher levels of water just with those events alone without a moon?
We've had about a foot of sea level rise most places in the U.S. here in the southeast in the last 100 years, if you extrapolate it out. In some places, we actually do have 100 years of record that show that. And what we're saying here with the projections is by 2050, which is less than 30 years away now, we're going to have another foot of sea level rise. So we're really increasing the rate.
Wow. So we're talking about a half an inch a year.
Yes, it'll start. Well, it's going to be exponential, right? It won't start off that, but the curve's going to get steeper.
Right.
Yep.
Right,
So yeah, you're adding another foot of water into the system. And I think what we're seeing in these high tide flood counts and things like that, Shay, is that we were right there. We were right there at that tipping point. We were right there at that threshold. And that this additional amount of water we're getting in this last 10 years of increasing sea level rise we're starting to push over that. We're starting to get, and that's why the counts are going up. That's why the Weather Service is putting out flood warnings almost every month now, it seems, you know. And that they've actually talked about changing the threshold because of their overwarning it, you know, at 7 feet mean lower level is their threshold in Charleston.
But, you know, that kind of thing, like, you know, Perigee, it always seems to line up just the wrong way for us, Doug. You know, it could be a tropical system with a Perigee and full moon, or it could be a strong nor'easter event with a Perigee and new moon. And those tend to drive the water up. But like you said, overall, our water heights are up higher than they normally would be. So when you're out there looking at your tide tables, like what DNR puts out or what you read in the newspaper, it used to be in the newspaper, your tide chart, just your standard tide chart that you would pull up in any app, it's not going to be right in most cases. It's usually going to be lower unless you have a blowout tide where the winds push the water out of the coastline. Yeah. Strong offshore westerly winds, for instance. But now the Weather Service, Wilmington, Charleston, Jacksonville, you name it, they're all having to do their own hydrological predictions based on this sea level rise. That's not even something that's mathematically factored in. They have to sort of take a stab at it. You know, the models, ET Surge is helpful in what they do. But basically what I'm saying, Doug, is your standard metrics for your tides are rarely ever right. Unless it's a neap tide, you know, where it's close.
No, you're right. It's the predicted tide. If you go to your astronomical predictions, your tide chart is based on the current national tidal datum epoch, NTDE, which is 1983 to 2001. So we have just completed the next tidal epoch, and NOAA's actually working on all the data to basically change the tidal datum. So that's going to be hopefully coming out in 25. So mean high water, which is sort of the mean high water plus a little bit is what floods everything, that's going to officially go up. And that's why we're not getting the tides right. They're not following the astronomical anymore. The astronomical is based on sea level as it was the last 19 years, not this 19 years. So soon we'll get an update on this 19 years, and then it's going to be incrementally higher on order of centimeters probably. Again, the average, the mean is what they're doing there. I mean, and then everything else, you know, extremes float on top of that, right? So you're going to have potentially bigger swings. But yeah, that's exactly right. So the whole community is going to have to adjust, especially surveyors, right? Building docks and piers, you're going to have to use a different tidal datum, or you'll have to get the newer tidal datum. So
in Charleston, we all know, for our area, Doug, not just, you know, and other areas in the Southeast too. I mean, you and I are from Charleston. And development is huge here, especially on these barrier islands or even these cut islands inside the estuarine environments. These are areas that are, you know, I would say as you get a little farther in, then the elevation kind of goes up a little bit. Certain places in Charleston, Dano Island's pretty resilient overall. It's a little bit higher in elevation, a little bit more tucked in. But when you get to, like, say, Bull Island and on the ICW, all those islands that lie in the ICW, the barrier islands themselves, Dewey's, so on and so forth, up and down the coastline, are highly susceptible to these flooding events that go on, not just portions of the city of downtown, you know, Charleston, per se, but Edisto. I mean, anytime there's a tropical, the whole front row of Edisto is covered, even though there's been beach replenishment, they've steepened the beaches. It's just it's a normal nuance or you know, nuisance flooding that occurs up and down the coastline. Anytime we get over 7.5 to 8 feet, it's a problem.
And on top of that, every time it does that, the waves that are at the coast, the immediate coast, the outer coast, are cutting away the dunes, experiencing erosion. Every time we have a perigee and tide, we have an onshore wind with waves. The waves are just making, they're basically trying to flatten the profile. I mean, the barrier islands naturally want to just kind of roll over like a steamroller. Right. And if we put barriers there, if we build there, because there's old marsh, like, exposed. If you go to the south end of Folly, where the new terminal groin is, not new anymore, but there's old marsh. It's basically the sand and the whole island's moving over old marsh.
Yeah. You can see that where the sandbanks at North Folly, even South Folly, we've been out there kiteboarding before, and you walk out and it falls up and there's like a shelf of mud and there's actually oysters. So the sand is overlapping those mud banks right there. It's pretty kind of dangerous if you don't know about that and you're an average person going out there to swim.
Yeah. You
get hurt.
Yeah, for sure.
Any last words to add on sea level rise? I know there's, it's a huge topic. Anything you wanted to add as a summary statement?
No, just if folks want to go, you could just Google Digital Coast. Just coast.noaa.gov is our main website. We have some mapping tools on there. It's called a sea level rise viewer, and you can look at whether it's sea level rise or you just want to see where does it flood at certain elevations. We map all the way up to 10 feet above mean high water. So that covers, like, our worst ever was Hugo. So it covers even above that. Although Hugo was not the worst we could see for sure. Anyway, and there's a lot of good information on there about flooding issues. So
thanks, Doug. Thanks a lot for coming on. No, you come on about every 5 years, because we know that the data doesn't just change from year to year. I mean, it can, but it's always good to have you on, Doug. Appreciate that.
That does it for this week's Carolina Weather Group. Thanks to Shay Gibson for conducting that conversation there with Doug Marcy. It's always great to have him on. And if you want to hear more of their conversation, you can check it out by becoming a supporter of the Carolina Weather Group on Patreon. At patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group, you can unlock an extended version of this week's episode to hear more of the conversation with Shay and Doug. It's our Patreon supporters that make this show possible and help keep the lights on around me. So please support us if you can at patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group. For everyone here at the Carolina Weather Group, I'm James Brierton. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you again back here real soon.